Snake is there. Yeah. Big deal. That was culture. He was actually a Brahmin. Brahmin means tatiksha. Tolerance. Brahmin particularly. Kshatriya maybe is a different thing. Kshatriya, just like Dhruva Maharaj, because he was the son of a Kshatriya, when he was insulted by his stepmother, he was a kid, 5 years old, he couldn't take it. Kshatriyas are a little particular about their honor. But a Brahmin is not supposed to care. So, they've insulted me, so now for 2 minutes in eternal time, my reputation has been have aspersions cast against it, so what? That's culture for a Brahmin. Yes.
Why is it that insulting a Vaishnava without knowing, or even without voting, that causes that effect?
Yeah, just like Krishna, if you insult him, you may know that he's God or not know. But if you, just like the queen, you insult the queen, you'll suffer. Whether you know that she's the queen or not. Suppose, hey, stupid lady! So you may know that she's not a queen, you may know she's queen or not, but if her police guard hears that you're insulting her, they're not going to ask, well, pardon me, but do you know who this is? Get in the car. Therefore, one is advised, don't insult anyone. Don't insult anyone. You don't know who the person's going to be. In Dhruva Maharaj, he wasn't anybody. He was a kid. And he became a Mahabhagavat. And then, because he became a Mahabhagavat, and he'd been insulted by the queen's son had to die.
Sometimes things happen accidentally, and even that causes them bad effects.
Yes. As it happened here, it wasn't intentional exactly. Just passion got a hold of this boy. Yes, it does. Just like putting your hand in fire. You can't say, well, I didn't know, it was an accident. You burn your hand. The laws of material nature, and the laws of God. Therefore, these demoniac qualities are very dangerous. Karma, what is that? Daya visampad vimokshaya nimbandhaya surimata. The godly qualities automatically lead to liberation, and the demoniac qualities automatically lead to bondage. A person is full of these demoniac qualities. He, you know, just like a person in power, who's drunk with power, and he starts, you know, beating on this one and smashing on this one and throw that guy out of here and insulting this one and that one. He's drunk. He doesn't know who he's dealing with, what he's doing, and he's paving his way to hell. Trividam narakasyedam dvaram nashanam atmanaha. Kama krodha tata lobha tasmari tadrayam jitiji. These demoniac qualities just lead one down to hellish life. There was a question over on this side? No? Yes?
Regarding this, what about, I think, when Srila Rupa Goswami, who was meditating in Vasis, Krishna started to learn. At that time, a crippled Vaishnava passed by and he felt a friend and told him it was not meant for him.
I've forgotten that story, to tell you the truth. I've heard it a couple of times and it hasn't registered with me.
Rupa Goswami, I think it was Rupa Goswami, was laughing in his meditation. He saw some funny
Vaishnavas. And then somebody was there?
Yes, some Vaishnava who was crippled. He passed and he was thinking that Rupa Goswami is laughing. He felt offended, and this moment, meditation of Rupa Goswami broke, was finished. And because of the offense and...
You want me to say something about it?
Yeah, how we can understand that also. It's completely...
I'd have to see the context of it.
There is the point is that we have to be sensitive to what's going on around us also. It's not that we just do our thing and that's it. But when others are present, we also have to take their presence into consideration.
Pallada Lama's class is about the seminar, it's about the free will. And it's
Pallada Nanda Swami, if you don't mind.
You see that Swinga, he insults him.
Who insulted what?
Swingi. He insults Maharaj Parikshit. But still, it's part of the plan of the Lord. How can you see his position? Is he just...
How can we see his position? Shringi's?
Yes.
We'll find out about that in coming verses. That question is answered. How the boy could get entangled and suffer when it was Krishna's arrangement. That will be explained in a couple of verses on. We'll come to it. Yes. Yes.
I was thinking first that the father of Shringi, he was telling that it's insignificant offense. And
yeah, the offense to him was insignificant.
I was thinking about the offense as small, bigger, and very, very big. Is there some...
there are different levels of offenses. Yes, discussion comes up in relation to Bhrigu Muni testing the different avatars, guna avatars. To insult by mentally, that's one offense. You just think something bad about a person, that itself is offensive. And more offensive if you speak something against that person. And most offensive is if you take physical action against the person. So they're increasingly offensive. I'm sure other measurements could be applied, you know, how heavy you speak and so many things.
The mental means also the emotional exchange. Like he didn't relate with his brother properly. The Shiva. So therefore he got offended.
Yeah, it was kind of... Yeah, yeah. When someone could do a deep analysis of offenses and categorize them in different levels of severity. But Vaishnava Aparad is considered at the top of the list. And at the top of the Vaishnava Aparads is offenses to the spiritual master. If one insults a pure devotee of the Lord, or one insults the spiritual master, yasya prasada nagatir kato, he's finished. Kills his spiritual life.
Combination of the person who is cultured but at the same time demoniac.
Yeah, that's Asari Sampad. Cultured in, just like we have so many cultured people now. You know, they know how to wear their tuxedo and they know how to do so many things. So they're cultured. They're considered cultured. But what are they cultured in? It's avidya. Prabhupada calls it the culture of nations. Just like you can cultivate mushrooms, it's a kind of culture. Germ culture. So they cultivate the demoniac qualities as something high. If the person can become more and more nasty, mean, demoniac, ruthless, and or insulting, and do it with a kind of finesse. If he can be suave when he insults you, if he can be cool when he insults you, then it's culture. Well, that's in the demoniac sense.
In terms of Vedic culture,
you can't be cultured in terms of, you can't be cultured in the true Vedic sense and be demoniac. Your culture begins with acknowledging the supremacy of the Lord, or being submissive to the Lord. Dampo, darpo, vimanascha, krodham parva. How can you be angry, arrogant, puffed up? So many. And be cultured at the same time. It's not, that's not culture. Yes?
Sometimes you see devotees who look with offenses over a period of time, and it seems, you know, they're not falling down, they're kind of...
Give them time. They're offending Vaishnavas and they're not falling down. Give them time. it will act. You can't, if we believe our philosophy, you don't get away with it. It's not that you can offend a Vaishnava and nothing will happen.
Unnecessary. Why doesn't Krishna immediately just remove
him?
What's the point of giving him this time to keep
on? Yes, Krishna has his arrangement. Krishna has his purpose. One is Krishna may want you to have the full opportunity to really finish yourself.
By going to the Dham, mm-hmm. you can offend people outside the Dham, but you only get the equal benefit. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you come to the Dham, then you get 1,000 times the benefits. You can go to hell that much quicker. He knows the desire of the person, how low they want to go, so he makes the arrangement.
You want to offend Vaishnavas? All right, I won't give you the reaction today. I'll let you go on. Offend them for a while, so that you'll be finished. Hmm? Or Krishna may have some other purpose, we don't know. Everything's complexly arranged by Krishna for all of his purposes. But no one gets away with Vaishnava Paras. You can't, and we've seen so many examples how someone is, he goes on, and then he's finished. At Ramchandrapuri, he was going on insulting the Vaishnavas, and finally he became like a useless person. Lost everything. That Gopal Chapala also, he's insulting. And he became a leper. So many examples. You can't do it. Very dangerous. And we think, you know, I'm special, I'm an ISKCON, I can do it, or I'm Brahmin, I can do it, I'm a sannyasi, I can do it. I'm a disciple of such and such, I can do it. Huh? You've seen that one floating around? I'm a disciple of such and such. I'm the son of Shamik Rishi. Because I'm the disciple of such and such, I can insult the Vaishnava. That's my right to do it. And nothing will happen. Right.
Mm-hmm. Our philosophy is that if we see another devotee be offended, we should become also angry and respond.
Yeah, we shouldn't take it.
Yeah. But in this case, one can say, Bhashvini was not offended personally, they offended his father, so he responded accordingly.
That's all right, but he was inexperienced and uncultured. Otherwise, it's all right, but you have to know then how to weigh the thing. He didn't take into account that it was a small offense, that there was some circumstance, it appeared as if the king wasn't properly received, that the king is the king, he wasn't an ordinary person, that the king was a Mahabhagavat, saved by Krishna himself from within the womb. Didn't take any of that into account. He insulted my father, who's a great Brahmin. I'm going to get him. That's all. That, because he didn't have mature intelligence, he couldn't take anything else into account. Just his own little consideration. You know, he got a couple of hits in the folio and he thought he knew the whole thing. No culture. Inexperience. Yes?
You were speaking about the example of Chingon, that he had knowledge but he didn't have proper qualities. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about like beginning of the fall down. Is it so that it's the external application of that varna is present, but there are no qualities? Like, for example, we can see vaishyas that have too much power and they exploit people, or kshatriyas who don't have the power but don't
have training.
Yeah.
The real thing is training. The vaishya has to be trained how to behave. And according to his Vaishya dharma. All right, you can cheat, you can lie, but you should be respectful. Just like we know there are some communities, and they cheat and they lie, but they always give charity to a sadhu. Right? They'll always give charity because they're properly trained. Because it's your business. As a businessman, you have to cheat, you have to lie, but you also have to give charity to sadhus.
At the end, we have one of the external, and we don't have that mood that we should. The training is lacking.
The training is lacking. Therefore, cultural training. Not that cheating and lying have to be emphasized, but the Vaishya, his duty is that he has to give charity.
Kshatriya
has to give protection. The Brahmin has to be tolerant and give knowledge. Shudra has to be obedient and give service. So according to the Varna, training is given. How to act. The boys of Krishna we were reading yesterday, they were instructed by their father, you're Kshatriya boys, you have to be very respectful to the Brahmins. And cultural training was given. And like here, the father was a Brahmin, so it's expected he'll train his son as a Brahmin. And he was going along, but immature, he impetuously acted.
Lacking.
Something was there, but he was immature. So one has to be mature. Like that, what is that? That story Prabhupada tells about the potter who started thinking about, for now I've got these pots, I've got five pots and I can sell these five pots and get so many more ingredients and I'll have 20 pots and then I'll sell those and then I'll have 50 pots and if my wife tells me anything, I'll just kick her. So then he kicked in his daydream and kicked over the five pots and he was finished. So Prabhupada said, the moral is first become a rich man and then kick your wife. So first become a sage, then start cursing. You know what you're doing, in other words.
What about children of devotees sometimes?
They may also think, you know, I'm a devotee, I can.
Sometimes these children may insult the parents also. What happens with children? What happens with these children?
They insult their parents?
Yes. Which are devotees?
Well, there's a little slack allowed there. Prabhupada told some story that in his householder life, his son was playing. I think he was keeping his son on his chest and some godbrother was there and he told the son, oh, don't you know that you're putting your foot on a great Vaishnav? You're putting your foot on a Vaishnav, do you see? And the boy said, he's not a Vaishnav, he's my father. Still, the children should be trained to be respectful, not only Vaishnava, but because they're parents, they should be respectful. And from the other side, the children are also Vaishnavas. So, not that the parents have to offer obeisances to the child, but be taken into account also that these children are Vaishnavas. They're not to be mistreated. Mistreatment also, I was thinking of it from your class this morning, Maharaj. It doesn't just mean that you mistreat them by beating them or this or that, but not giving them proper spiritual direction is also mistreatment. Or protection means giving proper spiritual guidance, proper spiritual training, so that the child can go back to Godhead, being protected from the material energy. That's protection. Otherwise, just that you protect the body of the child, that's not the half of it. You protect the body and the child spiritually dies. And what have you done? So physically, of course, the child should be protected, and spiritually the child should be protected. The child, the woman, the old man, the Brahmins. They should be spiritually protected also.
Maharaj, if one offends oneself, if you offend yourself, if you offend yourself, if you have self-destructiveness, has this any connection with that there outflows offending others?
Outflows what?
Offending others.
If you have to offend somebody, offend yourself. If you have to offend someone, offend yourself. Even if you're a Brahmin, yeah, right. A But from that point of view, you can present an argument for self-respect. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised Sanatana Goswami, don't kill yourself. You're supposed to be doing something for devotional service. So from that point of view, one should respect, therefore we don't torture the body or do, because Krishna is there within the heart and we're supposed to be engaged in Krishna's service. So not that we should be offensive to the point of self, but if you have to insult somebody, then it's safer to insult yourself. And maybe you'll get some realization from it. Yes?
I've heard most that you cannot go back to the spiritual world until everyone has forgiven you, that you must sort of go. So I wonder if this is true, if you can comment.
You can't go back to the spiritual world until everyone you've offended has forgiven you. I haven't heard that specific reference. But I know that it's understood that before you die, you should try to rectify any such offenses. I know Srila Prabhupada himself, in his last days, took the opportunity to beg forgiveness from some of his godbrothers, about whom he'd spoken very strongly in the course of his preaching work. Although even they admitted that Prabhupada did not acted offensively. Still, it's the principle that one shouldn't go leaving enemies due to offenses. One should get their good wishes also for going back to Godhead. But I haven't heard that specific in the Maharishis. Something else? Yes?
So yesterday you said that if one is repentant of his offenses, he clears all the...
Yes, by sincere repentance. That's the only thing. And that also, by repentance and by getting the forgiveness of the person offended. Who was it? Someone offended that Gopal Chapali, offended Srivas Thakur. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed by, so Gopal Chapali, please, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you're Patita Pavana, please, save me. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, get lost. I'm not going to save you. You can go to hell. I'm Patita Pavana, that's all right, but not in your case. Because you've offended Shiva's Thakur, you've offended a Vaishnava, you've offended my devotee. You can go to hell. Then later again he came back the same way. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, all right, if he forgives you, I forgive. So he got the forgiveness of Shiva's Thakur, then it was all right. Durvasa Muni also. Everybody, please protect me. Up to the point of Lord Vishnu, I also won't protect you. But if Ambarish Maharaj forgives you, then... And naturally, Ambarish Maharaj, Vaishnav, he was sorry, all Brahman is being put into difficulty on account of me. No. Well, Vaishnava is inclined to forgive upon the genuine repentance of the offending person. One time we went to visit one advanced Vaishnava who'd been very much offended by some of the devotees in ISKCON. And he said that actually there was no offense. He said, but if you think that you offended me, he said, then formally I forgive you. Lucky for those who were lucky for ISKCON. Formally I forgive you. ISKCON means devotee is inclined not to keep some grudge, he doesn't want to see others suffer. And he doesn't take offense for himself. The Lord is offended, other devotees are offended, but for himself, all right. That's sadhu. A sadhu may feel that way, but we should never take advantage and offend the sadhu, because he may forgive. Krishna doesn't forgive so easily. Yes, if you repent, and then the thing can be squared up. Otherwise, very dangerous.
Maharaj, the devotees, they forgive very easily. Sometimes devotees, they make offenses, and the devotees, they forgive and they let them continue their service. Is it better to just wait that they make a fall down and they leave anyway, or to also protect them in making offenses? And for example,
sometimes eager to see people live in offense. We're for training, so we try to correct a person. Don't offend. Act properly and make progress in your spiritual life. Not that we want to, well, go ahead. Do it. And that's another kind of perversity. You want to see him get, do the thing, you know, put your hand in the fire, go ahead. Won't hurt, go ahead. No, just so we can watch him suffer. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by his mercy, is giving instruction. Don't offend the person.
Even if we instruct, we tell them we...
Then it's on their head. You give every instruction, every warning, Shastra's warning, your warning, spiritual master's warning, still he goes on and on, then he's digging his own grave. Some other point, other question? Yes?
I'm curious about offenses within the mind. I mean, I remember there was a story, when the devotee came to Prabhupada, it's just coincidence. And he said, my mind like tells me there were in the temple. He said, my mind tells me to go take Iditis and like throw them on the floor, something like that. It was really like, so the mind can be completely crazy sometimes. It's amazing. This kind of ideas can come within your mind. I'm just curious, how does it work? What all these ideas?
How does the mind work? Pramati Bhagavadjudham. The mind is crazy. By contact with material nature and the modes especially of ignorance and passion, every kind of crazy idea comes into the mind. Don't associate with those modes of nature. Associate with Harinam. What is that? Krishna. Nistraigunya Bhavarjana. Don't associate with these modes of nature. You associate with the modes of passion and ignorance, then you'll think all sorts of things. And then you'll do all sorts of things. Dhyayato Vishaya Punasana. You start thinking of these things and then you'll do these things. Therefore, they shouldn't be allowed to stay in the mind and deteriorate the mind either. The mind should be purified by Harinam. Yes?
Sometimes I hear things that minimizing the offense in such a way that this is not really offense but correcting. This is a.
Just like the spiritual master, he offends the disciple. You're a fool. You have no brain. Your brain is made of cow dung. You can't do anything right. You're useless. You're worthless. That's the duty of the spiritual master. There's some Chanakya Pandit sloka that one should not coddle sons or disciples. One should criticize them. It's good for them. It's the duty of the father, it's the duty of the spiritual master to find out. And sometimes Prabhupada would say, that don't mind, he said, it's my duty. It's a duty. If the spiritual master doesn't find the faults in the disciple, that's his fault. He has to find out, no, you're doing the right thing. That's good training. So that's his duty. But not that I'll take a license, that now I'm father, or I'm the spiritual master, or I'm president, or I'm GBC, or I'm sannyasi, or I'm such and such. Now I can criticize. Let the criticism begin.
Isn't that verse on austerity of the tongue, that one can only speak strongly like that to those who are dependents. Mm. If they're not, then one doesn't speak like that. Mm.
To the inferiors we may sometimes speak. And that also should be for their benefit. Satyam priyahitam chaya. Out of actual concern for them. Not just out of... We saw sometimes Prabhupada, he would say these things, fool, rascal, you're useless, and then the next minute he's doing his correspondence, or he's... Not that he became so carried away by... But as a duty. Prabhupada said that his Guru Maharaj used to criticize that way. Prabhupada said, those were our glorious days. Yes?
I mentioned that although Srini has a qualified father, teacher also, that he's still making his...
Because he's not the father. The son of a high court judge is not a judge. The son of a Brahmin is not a Brahmin. The disciple of the spiritual master is not automatically a spiritual master. Any qualified person, his son is not automatically qualified. He has the opportunity to become qualified. The son of the Brahmin gets the opportunity for brahminical training. Son of the judge gets the opportunity for legal training. Disciple of the spiritual master gets the opportunity to be trained as a spiritual master. Everyone gets the opportunity, but it's not automatic. And now, who are you? I'm the son of such and such, therefore I'm qualified. No. Show your qualification. The boy was becoming qualified, atitejasvi, he had power, everything, but he was immature. Immaturely, if one wants to assert that he's qualified, he'll create trouble for himself and for others. Okay? Brahmanaya kshatrabandhur hi grihapalo nirupitaha sakatam tad grihe dvastha shabhandam bhoktamarhati. The descendants of the kingly orders are definitely designated as watchdogs, and they must keep themselves at the door. On what grounds can dogs enter the house and claim to dine with the master on the same plate?
Run out of power, have I? No. Srila Prabhupada points, the inexperienced Brahmin certainly knew that the king asked for water from his father, and the father did not respond. He tried to explain away his father's inhospitality in an impertinent manner, befitting an uncultured boy. He was not at all sorry for the king's not being well received. On the contrary, he justified the wrong act in a way characteristic of the Brahmins of Kali Yuga. He compared the king to a watchdog, and so it was wrong for the king to enter the home of a Brahmin and ask for water from the same pot. The dog is certainly reared by its master, but that does not mean that the dog shall claim to dine and drink from the same pot. This mentality of false prestige is the cause of downfall of the perfect social order. And we can see that in the beginning it was started by the inexperienced son of a Brahmin.
Well, this is the action of Kali. Where is this? Oh, I see. Sorry. This is the action of Kali. Again, inexperienced, impertinent, uncultured. And the boy, Brahmanai Kshatrabandhur hi. He's calling the king Kshatrabandhu, the unqualified friend of a king. And actually, the boy is Brahmabandhu. He is the unqualified son of a Brahmin, and he's calling the king the unqualified friend of a Kshatriya. So often we find that this is the nature of those who have no culture. They themselves, Prabhupada cited, the sieve is criticizing the needle for having a hole in it. They themselves are full of bad qualities, and they find out some small discrepancy in some qualified person and begin to criticize. This is Kali Yuga.
criticize and criticize and criticize and criticize. Huh? And the more you can go on criticizing and criticizing, the more you think you're something. It's the culture of the fly. The fly is accustomed to drink pus. So they look for some pus, and then they find a little pus and they go on drinking. So there are those who look for some small discrepancy, or not even a discrepancy, and they go on criticizing and criticizing, fault finding. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, one of the qualities of knowledge, aversion to fault finding. Aversion to fault finding. Prabhupada said the bees drink honey, the flies drink pus. So the cultured persons, they, like a Vaishnava, he seeks to glorify the good characteristics of other Vaishnavas. That's his habit. How to find some good characteristic and appreciate. Yes, he's done something. And the uncultured persons, they just criticize with nasty name-calling, with no etiquette, and placing themselves as if, you know, practically new bhakta, and he's placing himself on the level of, you know, the most experienced persons. They're like on a first name basis. You know, who's Vidyapurna think he is anyway? What gives him the right? Blah, 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 blah. As if, you know, he's somehow or other entitled to do that. It's a sign he has no culture. If some person of culture, if he sees some fault even, he acts very differently. He goes to that person very submissively, he presents something. Or else he keeps his mouth shut entirely, he doesn't say anything. Maybe he thinks that I might have. But if he sees actually it's there, there's a problem. He approaches that person. If that fails, then he may approach some other contemporary person. That is to say, a person on the equal level of that person. This is the problem, such and such as, you know, we saw him smoking or whatever it is. And that person tries to do something. But not just that you start, you know, turn on the broadcast, and not also in a nasty way. It's culture. So much of difficulty is created by lack of culture. Now, ladies have complained, you know. So many statements are made about the ladies in Shastra, which are true, but it has to be presented in a cultured fashion. Suppose it said the women are less intelligent. So not that the man takes it, my mother's stupid. My mother's a stupid idiot, it says so in Shastra. It means he has no culture. Means he has no culture. He doesn't appreciate the good quality. My mother is taking care of me. My mother is so affectionate to me. My mother is cooking for me. My mother is so many things. And my body I've got from my mother, everything. No. See? Right there in the Shastra. It means he's uncultured. Prabhupada was appreciated by everyone. He could get away with saying anything because he was cultured. He, not that he would disrespect that we got something on you from the Shastra. Otherwise everyone was macho also. But Prabhupada still would appreciate, he would encourage, he would find some scriptural statement that machos also can become Vaishnavas. By culture. Prabhupada gave that definition of Vaishnava. Perfectly cultured gentleman. Therefore, Prabhupada, you know, we're criticized sometimes that our sannyasis say heavy things about women. Prabhupada said more heavy. We say a few little things. We're afraid. Prabhupada said the heaviest things. But then he would say it in such a nice way that everybody would, the ladies also would like it. That he could say anything, and they would also not be angry or upset. He probably would adjust everything in such a way that no one would be dissatisfied. He could say, or some rascal might be dissatisfied, that's different. But he would say things in such a way as to adjust it so that everyone's pleased. Everyone's encouraged in Krishna consciousness. Everyone's appreciated for their contribution. That's Vedic culture. In Vedic culture, there's a respectful name for a Shudra. There's a respectful name for a Kshatriya. There's a respectful name for a Vaishya. Vaishya Sethji. Sethji. A respectful name. And I think for Shudra Mahajan. Mahajan, you're a great soul. The Mahasudra, you call him great soul, he appreciates, yes. But they used to have such, still it's there, respectful names. For all, just like Panditji for the Brahmins. The Brahmin also, he doesn't say, yes, I'm Panditji, and you're nonsense. But he would address the Shudra also by a respectful name. That's culture. That everyone is respected. Amanina, manadina. How to respect the women, how to respect the old men. Old man is also useless. From one point of view, can't do anything. Can't remember whether he brushed his teeth or not. You know, they get so old they can't figure out what's up and what's down. But a cultured person won't denigrate him. Oh, he's useless. He's an old person. Has to be respected. Has to be protected. Has to be respected. You see? The whole thing is culture. If our society has knowledge and no culture, it won't go. There won't be happy dealings, there won't be happy life, there won't be proper adjustment of everything. There has to be knowledge and there has to be culture. Then it's good. India still, there's culture. Therefore, Prabhupada said that everyone should go to Mayapur. Actually, Prabhupada was encouraging that every year, everyone should go to Mayapur. And they should spend some time in India also and become cultured. Because in India, still there's culture. We'll go to the airport and we'll see that the mother and father are arriving and the son is touching their feet. Although he may be 30, 40, whatever, he may be big man, but his parents come, he's touching their feet. He doesn't quote Shastra, oh, you're a woman, you're less intelligent. He's touching the feet of the mother. Or to any woman, they're respectful.
Say anything you want to anybody, but don't say anything bad to a woman.
Don't say anything bad to a woman. Don't say anything to a woman. Go on the street and just, start talking to a woman is very bad. What right do you have to talk to this woman? Is she your relative? Hey lady, this, that, the other thing. In India, if you strike up a conversation with a woman, it's like, what's going on here? And the stereotype is there that in India, the women are all beaten on and they're this and that. But actually in any cultured Indian family, women are excessively respected. Excessively respected. What? Yatra naryastu pujante ramanti tatra devata. Where the women are worshipped, there the demigods are enjoying. Vedic culture. So the whole Mahabharata war was fought on this principle. The woman has been insulted. A respectable woman has been insulted. And same thing, Robin. Respectable woman has been insulted, you're going to die. And your whole city is going to get wiped out. Two big wars in Indian history, both on this principle. So much respect is given. Although they knew the Shastra also, they could quote something and say something. But they knew culture also. Woman is to be respected.
woman, king, cow, Brahmin, sage, old person, it's culture. So here the boy is uncultured, immature, puffed up, inexperienced. So Kali is going to enter. I think we're out of time. Yesterday we went over time a little bit. One last question?
What is the nature of good criticism? Like the spiritual master giving the chastisements in the form and the this or that. It's very harsh.
That's good criticism. Any criticism your spiritual master gives you, that's good criticism. This is what he gives you is good. Because it's done with your welfare in mind. Good criticism means that it's done with not for your own satisfaction. This criticism is useless. It's just for the boy's own self-inflation. But actual criticism means that it's done by the entitled party for the benefit of others. Then it's good criticism. When you have the right to do it, and you do it out of genuine concern for the welfare of others, then it's right, good criticism. And when you know what you're talking about. You're mature, you're qualified, you know your stuff, and you're the right person to give the criticism, and you're going to do it for the person's benefit or for the benefit of others. And it's good. Otherwise not. And the person who's qualified, his qualification is that he knows how to check internally. Am I qualified? Is this the right... Is it my duty to criticize? If he's not, he doesn't do it. If it is, he goes to it. The best criticism is the criticism received from the spiritual master. That's always good for us. Yes?
Is it because he has accepted the spiritual master as an authority, so he's opened up for really harsh criticism?
Yes, you've surrendered for training, for cultural rectification. Now it's the spiritual master's duty to reciprocate. Just like Arjuna, Shochan and Vishochastam, Pankivanashri. Now you've surrendered? All right, you're a fool. Lesson number one. All right, we should stop. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Ayurvandeshu yojata navyatanti narishyanti yata atma gunashrayaha.
Namo, you can close that window for now. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Shamiti Nam. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaudavani Pacharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi
Ityuktva roshatam raksho vayasyan rishivalaka koshit gyapa upaspishya bhagvadram visasar jaha. Ityuktva roshatam raksho vayasyan rishivalaka.
So the son of the rishi, his eyes red hot with anger, touched the water of the river Koshik while speaking to his playmates and discharged the following thunderbolt of words. So,
Really?
Rishi Balaka. He's not actually a rishi. He's a Rishi Balaka, the son of a rishi, not actually a rishi. And therefore, he's just acting childishly, cursing the king. And Koshik Gyapa Upaspisha. He touches the water of the Koshik River as one does for purification. But it doesn't mean he's going to become purified. He's a rascal boy.
Iti langita maryadam takshaka saptame hani dankshati sma kulangaram chorito metata juham.
On the seventh day from today,
a snake bird will bite the most wretched one of that dynasty, Maharaj Parikshit, because of his having broken the laws of etiquette by insulting my father. Well, the same thing. Blangita Maryada, he's overstepped the etiquette. The boy himself is the worst overstepper. Well, we'll find the right word. Offender. He's the worst offender of etiquette. And he's cursing the king. You've overstepped the etiquette. Kulangaram. You're the most wretched of your dynasty. Again, what is it that if you're pointing one finger this way, your three fingers are pointing that way? And again, it's all in the name of the father. And we'll see how the father responds. Prabhupada comments, this is the beginning of the misuse of brahminical power. And gradually the Brahmins in the age of Kali became devoid of both brahminical powers and culture. You start by being devoid of culture and you wind up being devoid of power also. You may have power, but if you don't have culture, you'll lose your power also, as we've seen. Someone has power and no culture, he risks his power also.
Saying in Bengali that if you have two people in a room in chairs and you want to get the other person out of the chair and out of the room, you have to get out of yours to chase them out.
Thus the personality of Kali conquered the Brahmin boy first and gradually the other castes. Thus the whole scientific system of orders of society in this age has assumed the form of a vitiated caste system, which is now being uprooted by another class of men similarly influenced by the age of Kali. So it starts and goes on. First one goes down, becomes unfit, and then the next class of men, just like someone wants to uproot some class of men and take over, and then that class of men becomes unfit, and then the next group wants to, it's a revolution, and the next revolution, and the next revolution. So this contingent throws out that contingent, and then that contingent becomes useless and gets thrown out by the next contingent. The history of revolution.
Tato vyetyashramam balo gale sarpa kalebram pitaram viksha dukkarto muktakanto rugodaha.
Thereafter, when the boy returned to the hermitage, he saw a snake on his father's shoulder, and out of his grief he cried very loudly. Purport, the boy was not happy because he'd committed a great mistake, and he wanted to be relieved of the burden on his heart by crying. But it was too late. The father regretted the whole incident.
Sava angiraso brahman shutva suta vilapanam un milya shanakarane trejishvacham se mitorigam.
The rishi, born in the family of Angira Muni, hearing his son crying, gradually opened his eyes and saw the dead snake around his neck. He threw the dead snake aside and asked his son why he was crying, whether anyone had done him harm. On hearing this, the son explained to him what had happened. Being influenced by Kali, Srila Prabhupada comments, the boy cursed the king and thus ended a chapter of happy history.
Nishamya saptam atararham narendram sabrahmano natmajam abhyanandat aho batam ho mahadajyate kutam alpiyasi droha urur damodrataha.
The father heard from the son that the king had been cursed, although he should never have been condemned, for he was the best among all human beings. The rishi did not congratulate his son, but on the contrary began to repent, saying, "Alas, what a great sinful act was performed by my son. He has awarded heavy punishment for an insignificant offense." The laws of punishment are, according to the gravity of the offense, the punishment should be proportionately grave.
but for a small offense, a grave punishment, death sentence for playing a small joke or a small offense. So Brahmano natmajam abhyanandat. The boy might have thought that he'd be congratulated by the father, but the father was distressed, not pleased. The boy thought, let me show my stuff, let me... But the father said, a hug, what is that? What a great sin you've performed. Yes. Okay. It's distressing. Amha mahat. It's a great sinful thing. The king particularly is not to be cursed. Fourth canto, it's the duty of all citizens in a state never to insult the king, even though he sometimes appears to have done something very sinful. Because of his prowess, the king is always more influential than all other ruling chiefs. Purport, according to Vedic civilization, the king is supposed to be the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's called Naranarayan, indicating that Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears in human society, it is as the king. It is etiquette that neither a Brahmin nor a Kshatriya king is ever insulted by the citizens. Even though a king appears sinful, the citizens should not insult him. Navai nivir naradevam parakyam sammatum arhas yavipakva buddhe yatedasa durvishihena durvishahena gupta vindanti padranya kutobaya praja. Oh my boy, your intelligence is immature, and therefore you have no knowledge that the king, the best among human beings, is as good as the personality of Godhead. He's never to be placed on an equal footing with common men. The citizens of the state live in prosperity, being protected by his unsurpassable prowess. This word is used here, apakva buddhe, immature intelligence. Apakva, the same word is used several times, apakva buddhe, apakva buddhe, immature intelligence. And na sammatam, he shouldn't be placed on an equal footing. The culture means, we described previously, recognizing hierarchy, not that everyone's regarded as equal. There's some country that had a revolution for the sake of equality. That's foolishness. That's foolishness. There's always inequality. Someone is higher, someone is lower. You can't stop it. But there shouldn't be this ill feeling between higher and lower. The ill feeling is not one. There must be higher and lower, everywhere. Throughout the creation, you'll find higher and lower. Your feet are lower than your head. What are you going to do? Flatten it out? Well, now the feet and the head are on an equal level. We've improved things. Or force him. Now put your feet in the air and walk on your hands. Maybe you can spread it out 1 hour, feet up, 1 hour, feet down, 1 hour, feet up, 1 hour, feet down. There will always be higher and lower. But there shouldn't be enmity and envy. There should be cooperation. Alakshamane naradeva namni ratangapana vayam angalokaha tadahi choda prachuro vinangshat yarakshamano vivarutabat kshanat. My dear boy, the Lord who carries the wheel of a chariot is represented by the monarchical regime. And when this regime is abolished, the whole world becomes filled with thieves who then at once vanquish the unprotected subjects like scattered lambs. This is important. An ideal king, thoroughly trained by culture and devotional service with the martial spirit, makes a perfect king. capsule summary. Ideal king, trained by culture, trained by devotional service, martially spirited, perfect king. Such a personal monarchy is far better than the so-called democracy of no training and no responsibility. No training, no responsibility. Just somebody's elected to a post, he messes around for a few years, then he picks up his money and goes, and whatever happens next is the responsibility of the next guy. I'm out of here. Huh? No training, no responsibility. So it's like love affairs. Pick up with a girl, have a good time for a little while, take off, and whatever happens next is her problem. Same mentality. Just take advantage, exploit, and go. And whatever happens next, don't tell me about it. This is Kali Yuga. So the king was responsible. And after the king, his son is the next trained up person to be responsible. But now they've made it that some rascal is elected and he messes around. And the persons who elect him are responsible. And who are they? They're the persons who have to suffer. So Prabhupada points out later that you're responsible for your own suffering. No one to blame other than yourself. The thieves and rogues of modern democracy seek election by misrepresentation of votes. We talked about that this morning. And the successful rogues and thieves devour the mass of population. And what is that? Dasyu prayeshu rajasu. In the Kali Yuga, the king is supposed to protect the citizens from the thieves, but in Kali Yuga, the king is the thief. The king himself or the government men become the biggest thieves. They rip off the citizens and go. One trained monarch is far better than hundreds of useless ministerial rogues. And it is hinted herein that by abolition of a monarchical regime like that of Maharaj Parikshit, the mass of people become open to many attacks of the age of Kali. They are never happy in an overly advertised form of democracy. The result of such a kingless administration is described in the following verses. I think in Mahabharata, Bhishma has a lot to say about ministers. One of the main duties of the king is to hold the ministers in check. Someone gets a ministerial post and he's got a little propensity for doing mischief. He has power. So the transport minister, the agriculture minister, the foreign minister, the home minister, they all have some power. And if the king doesn't ride herd over them, they'll start trampling on the citizens. So the king has that responsibility to check the ministers. When the king is a weakling, then the ministers just plunder the citizens. They all line their pockets at the expense of the citizens. The ministers, the sub-ministers, the deputy ministers, the assistant ministers, the provisional minister, this minister, then they all get in there, start eating up the life of the citizens. So the people never become happy by an overly advertised, it's advertisement, democracy, we're fighting for democracy, make the world safe for democracy, democracy, democracy. But what is it? Just that we grew up, fascism is bad. What is fascism? I couldn't define it for you. You have to ask me, what is fascism exactly? I don't know. It's just that it's bad. And what is democracy? Well, I couldn't tell you that either, but it's good. Huh? It means that people in America are happy and people in Nepal are unhappy because they have a monarchy. Is it? Of course, they're not much of a monarchy. But previously, strong monarchy, so people were unhappy there because there was a king. And now because we have a lecher president and everybody's happy. Is it so? That democracy, as soon as there's democracy, everything's bright and happy and good. When there's a good king, then people are actually happy, just like during the time of Parikshit Maharaj. Everybody had everything. They couldn't even have bad weather. The king was so on top of things. Now in the coming verses we'll find out what happens. Are there any questions so far? Yes.
There's this American saying, how power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Could you come back
from this? Not an American saying, it's from somebody in Europe. Yeah. Power corrupts and absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely. Yes. Therefore, the monarch has to be properly trained that you're not absolutely powerful. The absolute power is held by the person who can never be corrupted. That's Krishna. Krishna has absolute power, and he's never corrupted, because there's nothing that can corrupt Krishna. The only absolute power is Krishna. Everyone else has relative power. A relative power tends to corrupt. Therefore, one has to be submissive to the absolute. If one thinks, I'm absolute, then by illusion one tends to be corrupted. Even if he's a tiny bug, you know, an insignificant little banana republic dictator, he starts to, you know, exploit like crazy. But when one understands that he is subject to the absolute power, accountable to the absolute power, subject to punishment by the absolute power, that he's a servant of the absolute power, and then it's a different story. This is the whole disease. Even the person in the modern democracy, he gets carves out a little space for himself and becomes absolutely powerful in his own illusory estimation. But a person who has higher understanding, there are chairs here if you want me. Yeah, sure. Be my guest. The person in Krishna consciousness, he knows that I'm a relative to Krishna, I'm a servant of Krishna. As long as he's Krishna conscious, he won't be corrupted. And as soon as he's forgets Krishna, then he's open to corruption. Therefore, martial spirit, brahminical training, proper training, and devotional service. Without the real corruption is that the people are not trained. The Democrat without training tends to be corrupted. He doesn't need absolute power to corrupt him. He's corrupt to begin with. He's already corrupt. Whatever little power he has, he's corrupt when he walks in, he's corrupt when he walks out, he's corrupt in the middle. Everyone in the material world is corrupt, therefore one has to be reformed, samskarat, by proper training, proper culture. And he has to be situated in devotional service and advised by self-realized souls. The beauty of the Varnashram system is that those who are at the top of the system have no power. The Brahmins, what do they have? They have no money. They have hardly any property. Their only power is in their purity. And all the power, all the money, and the, you know, the big strength, that's with the second section of men, not the top men. Top men are the beggars, the Brahmins. Taking into account the dictum that absolute power corrupts, the Brahmins don't take power. They advise the power. And they keep their distance from the power. And those who are in charge of power, the Kshatriyas, Sauryam, Tejo, they're in the business of power. They're trained to take direction from the Brahmins. So power takes direction from intelligence. Power takes direction from intelligence. The arms take direction from the head. Otherwise, arms unto themselves. Well, arms make the man, right? Man gets, you know, some rockets and missiles and stuff, and he thinks I'm powerful. When our President Johnson used to talk about my boys, my rockets, my guns, my tanks, my this, my that, my power. The actual power is supposed to reside with Krishna, and the king exercises his power under the direction of the representatives of the Lord, the Brahmins. Then things run nicely. Otherwise, in the absence of qualified Brahmins, then power becomes corrupt. No brain. Like a madman, you know, he's powerful, he's running around. They have to put him in a straitjacket because he's got no brain. Otherwise, a powerful person, and a powerful person only with intelligence, he's also a threat, diabolical. But a powerful person with intelligence and culture, Brahminical culture, he's the best possible thing you could ask for.
The difference between when you look at the kshatriya mentality, the passion, the pride, the honor, and at first glance it seems so similar to the demoniac mentality.
Difference between the demonic and the kshatriya. The kshatriya is also passionate, he's also proud and so on, but he's obedient to the Lord. That's the difference between Vishnu Bhakta Smita Daiva Asuras Tad Viparya. The Vishnu Bhakta, the godly persons are submissive to the Lord. Although he may have some pride, although he may be passionate, he uses his pride and passion in the service of Krishna. And the Asura is just the opposite. It's all for himself. It's all for himself. Just like a cop, a policeman. You know, he's got a certain pride and a certain stature and a certain reputation and this and this and this. But what does he do with it? He uses it for curbing down the desperados, the outlaws. And the desperados, they have the same pride and passion, but it's for, you know, robbing banks and doing all that kind of stuff. So you can say it's the same mentality, but one is lawful, or one is appreciated. Yes, he's protecting the citizens. And the other, he's, you know, wiping out their savings and so on. The essential difference is obedience to the Lord. Everything becomes good when used in Krishna's service, under Krishna's direction. Without passion, nothing's created. No, creation is required, and therefore the passionate energy is used in the service of Krishna. Is that okay?
One small sub-question to that. There's also examples of these great demons who did follow Krishna's laws, you know, in their particular realm.
No. They follow. What great demon who followed Krishna's laws? He's the number. What kind of following Krishna's laws? He stole Krishna's wife. Up to that, he was fine. Yeah, did everything. Varnashram was cool. Everything was all right. Only thing that it was that he wanted to steal God's wife. Otherwise, he was very good. It's all discounted. All your, you know. He was kind to his family, he loved his dog, he was, you know, used to be very nice to his servants. Only thing was that he wiped out a village, but otherwise he was a nice guy, you know. That's not enough.
Pol Pot's wife said he was a good father.
He was a good father. Pol Pot's wife. He was a good father to their daughter, right? Stalin loved his cat, you know? Mm-hmm. Another question? Yes?
I was wondering if you could point out, like, in a very short sentence, what exactly was the role of Srimi? Is he like the typical example of a Kali Yuga minded person?
No, he's not the typical example of a Kali Yuga minded person. He's a typical example of a puffed up, immature, inexperienced son of a Brahmin. That's the summary. He's not a typical Sudra of Kali Yuga. He's a typical puffed up, falsely proud, inexperienced son of a Brahmin. That's who he is. Without culture.
Maharaj, I have the questions. First is, you've mentioned that the highest orders, according to Varnashram, is has no power, actually. But if we look on ISKCON, then we see that the situation is a little bit different. And how to adjust to that.
Shankarai Krishna.
And another one.
yes. It's the same for the next one too. Every society has to be arranged in such a way that people's responsibilities are clearly defined, and that you have the right people doing the right thing. Does that answer your first question? Okay, so next question.
Here in text 41, it's mentioned that a heavy punishment for insignificant offense was sinful. Can we also think about like an inverse relationship? Insignificant punishment for severe offense.
In regard to what?
In general case. Is it also like a sin for a kshatriya?
Yeah. Or? Yeah. If you take some person, just like the law, if the judge, you know, you steal some peanuts at the grocery store and the judge has you executed, is it right?
Inverse relationship.
In?
Inverse. It's like when somebody does something very severe, then, well, that's an example which is coming to my mind, for example, it's child abuse, and if the punishment is very light, it's like it doesn't actually...
It should be severe in principle. Now you have to see if there's any mitigating circumstance also.
I don't want to like...
It's not that it's severe. If you abuse a child, a woman, an old man, a Brahmin, a sage, a cow, that's very severe. So then that should be dealt with very severely, just like Ashwatthama. He killed innocent boys. So then immediately he should be killed. Then it was taken into account, but he's a Brahmin. And then that was argued, well, is he really a Brahmin? Is he not a Brahmin? Then it's taken into account, he's the son of Dronacharya, who's our teacher. In different angles of vision it was seen. Someone took one side, someone took this, and Arjuna had to judiciously punish him. Therefore, pakva buddhi, it has to be done by the person who has mature intelligence. Otherwise you just get a slogan, oh, he's offended a Brahmin. He's offended a Brahmin. Brahmins are the topmost men. He should be punished. Ba-da-da-da. And you get the little kid who doesn't understand things. And he's just cursing and wrecking everything. Then you get the father, who's, oh, but he's the king. Even if the king does something very severely wrong, he shouldn't be punished. And this also wasn't severe. And he's a Mahabhagwat, he's a devotee.
Not even a regular king.
Samrat, he's independent emperor, he's top of the and you're punishing him? The boy only knew the slogan, you know. Off with his head, off with his head. But the father was a real Brahmin. He knew that everything has to be weighed very carefully. Which doesn't mean that everything is just dismissed. Oh, he did this? Well, gosh, you know. But things do have to be considered very carefully. Not that perpetrators of heinous activities are simply excused, you know, because they're big men or got old, you know, members of the old boys club. But also not that just as a knee-jerk response, we start throwing thunderbolts in every direction. Things have to be done very judiciously. Otherwise, you're trying to achieve one result, and as we'll see, you can achieve a very different result. You try to set something straight, and you mess something else up. Everything has to be done very judiciously. Yes?
I was trying to understand how ISKCON will instruct the Kshatriyas nowadays.
Yes, we have our books. We have so much instruction to give them. This is instructive, this Bhagavatam. So much instructive knowledge for Kshatriyas. So therefore, ISKCON is meant to be a Brahminical society, a society which can give knowledge to guide the heads of state. Yes. This whole chapter is giving good knowledge in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Also, this son of the Brahmana was very unreliable and very...
Loud, please, and slow.
This son of the Brahmana, which cursed in Parikshit, was very unripe. And he did something he should not have done very badly. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, he gave Sukadev Goswami the opportunity to give the whole Srimad Bhagavatam to King Parikshit. So in fact, he did something for the benefit of whole human society. Mm-hmm. So how should we look to that?
Therefore it was Krishna's arrangement. It's not that he was saying, well, let me curse this king and then Sukadev Goswami will come and speak. He was just up to mischief. And he was excused not so much because the result was the speaking of Srimad Bhagavatam, but because he was a boy. You can say he's cursed a king, he should be punished, but he's a boy. Always taken into account, he's a boy. And the father interceded with the Lord, as we'll see, that please forgive this foolish boy. It was Krishna's arrangement that a boy would do the cursing so that whatever reaction would come would not be so heavy on him.
The boy also doesn't get the credit for that. Krishna gets the credit.
Krishna gets the credit.
The boy has a bad mentality. Krishna needs to arrange that. He uses that person as the instrument, but the instrument doesn't get the credit.
Mm-hmm. If Bhagavatam is spoken, we don't glorify Sringi. Sringi is so wonderful. He arranged.
Start a new sampradaya. Start a new sampradaya.
Start the Sringi sampradaya. And Krishna gets the credit. Yes.
According to this, in this case, like if it's Krishna's arrangement, I mean, in different cases, what was supposed to be the behavior? How?
Everything is Krishna's arrangement. We have to act as Krishna dictates.
How can we avoid
what?
The Brahman. I mean, if it's already like...
Yeah, he could. Any more than the king could avoid offending the sage. Normally the king would not have done such a thing. Therefore the Acharyas have the opinion that the whole thing was set up by Krishna. It was all worked out by Krishna. Practically it was scripted by Krishna. Therefore it worked out in such a way the boy didn't have to suffer. And the king was pulled out of his material attachments. Mm-hmm. and all the sages showed up at the right time, and Sukadeva Goswami showed up at the right time. The whole thing was Krishna's setup.
Then this question
in
the world have maybe so much to do with the lecture if Maharshi is sleeping now, but where do you put the free will then now?
Where do you put the?
Free will.
Yes, free will is always there, but sometimes things are set up in such a way that the pressure on you is so much that you don't have a whole lot of choice.
Free will is always there.
If Sringi hadn't done it, someone else would have done it. But by a little manipulation. There's ways, you know. We have ways of making you talk. There's free will, but there's also pressure. A person in the mode of passion, you know how he's going to act. It's predictable. Or a person in the mode of ignorance. You know? You can predict. They put the little laboratory animals there, and they kind of know how they're going to act. They have some free will, but they're going to act like little laboratory rats. You know, that they entrap spies that way. You know, they get a beautiful girl, you know, dressed to kill, and she does. Because James Bond is James Bond, and he falls for the girl, or whatever it is. Person in the mode of passion, he has free will. He can say, well, what do I care about girls for? Girls of Maya. But because he's in the mode of passion, so he gets trapped by the opposing king who's got this girl working for him to get all the secrets and so on. And because he's in the mode of passion, although he has free will, she's irresistible. It means she's technically resistible, but irresistible. Because he's in the mode of passion. So a person is, although he has free will, he's acting under the dictations of material nature. He's free, but he's become a slave. He's free, but he becomes a slave by embracing the modes of material nature. That's his own choice. And then you can predict. Now he's in passion, he's going to act passionate. He's in ignorance, he's going to act ignorant. Just another question.
Who shared this reaction of Sringi? The old Brahmanas?
It comes on the whole human society. Because of his cursing the king, had to die. And we'll see what the Brahmins had to become responsible. The father's in difficulty. My son has cursed a faultless king, so now the father is feeling in difficulty. And he's feeling that the entire Brahminical caste is responsible. Just like when Gandhiji was killed, then the whole caste of people from whom that, what was it, Khosle, those people who killed him? No, that was Gandhira. A certain Maharashtrian, couple of Maharashtrian guys, their family wasn't, their whole caste got in trouble. You know, people were burning down their homes and stuff like that. It all came on them, although they weren't directly involved. So then we'll find in the coming verses how it came on the whole society. It came on the Brahmins, it came on the Kshatriyas, it came on everybody. The whole society got messed up by this one thing. Whole culture went down. Any other questions?